You are listening to Past and Present, the Colonial Williamsburg podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our very special podcast. The Black Petticoat Society is so delighted to welcome our friend Rachel West, who is presenting Colonial Williamsburg, and we are going to be talking about all things related to Colonial Williamsburg and Turn Washington Size. For those of you who may be joining us who have never heard one of our podcasts before, we kind of want to introduce our organization. The Black Petticoat Society is a group of fans of Turn Washington Size. So we make every effort to discuss the show in a historical context as well as from an entertainment standpoint. My name is Alyssa Von Kirkbride. I am the First Lady of the Black Petticoat Society. If you're interested in hearing more about what we do and who we are, you can visit our new website at blackpetticoatsociety.org. I'm going to introduce my co-host for our podcast. I'm going to start with the lovely Karen Roth.
Hello. Hi.
And next we have the fabulous Krista DiCillo.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
This next lady, lovely lady, is Robin Maddie. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
And, of course, the lovely Amanda Lee. Good evening.
Howdy, howdy.
And it is with great pleasure that I introduce our very, very special guest, Miss Rachel West.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
It is our absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Anytime, anytime.
So we wanted to start by talking about some of the really exciting things that are going on at Colonial Williamsburg. The awesome thing is if you follow Colonial Williamsburg on Facebook, if you follow them on Twitter, if you keep up to date with their website, they are always adding new and exciting programming all the time. And now they have introduced a musket range that allows guests to fire actual reproductions, 18th century weapons, but they are live rounds. So unlike what you might get to see at a reenactment, this is an entirely new experience. It's really probably quite interesting for somebody who wants a historically authentic experience, because I don't know where else you can go if you want to fire live rounds from historical weapons. So Rachel, can you tell us a little bit about how that process works and what guests get to do and what the experience is like?
Yeah, sure. So the whole idea of a musket range is to be able to give people an idea of how these weapons work. This is not only just for gun enthusiasts, it's also for people who have never handled guns, it's for historians, it's for anyone who's interested in this type of weapon. I can tell you, someone who's grown up in the country, I have fired some BB guns, I've fired shotguns, I've fired all sorts of things, but I've never fired an 18th century musket or a fowling piece, because that's just not readily available to everyone. So what we've done at Colonial Williamsburg is created this musket range, which is a range you would go to any other type of gun range. All the safety regulations are there, and you have the chance to fire two pieces, the musket and the fowling piece, which are similar but also very different. The instructors at the range will teach you everything you need to know about the pieces, how they work, some history on both pieces. Fun fact about the fowling piece is a lot of members of the militia, when they would join up, they would have to bring a weapon, and they would mostly bring fowling pieces. They weren't bringing muskets. Muskets were typically saved for the Continental Army because that was an actual military weapon. The fowling pieces were used to keep pests off your property for hunting purposes, and that's the weapon that you would have brought with you when you joined up with the militia. So you have the opportunity to fire both of those. You are firing at a target downrange. It's awesome. I've been able to do it. If you want to see some video of us doing it or learn, the whole social media department was able to do it. We had a really cool girl power day during Women's History Month. We all went down to the range and got to shoot the weapon, and not to brag, but I hit the target every time, 8 out of 8. It was really awesome. It was really cool. The guys there were really great. You get a cool little souvenir when you're done. I don't want to give it away. You can go read the blog, but the blog is at makinghistorynow.com. That is Colonial Williamsburg's official blog. So we post all sorts of fun stuff there, but definitely more information about the musket range is there.
Is it something for the whole family? I mean, is there like an age range that you allow to come in and shoot?
Yes, there is an age range. You have to be at least 14, and anyone under the age of 18 must be accompanied by a parent or guardian.
My friend was just down there last weekend, and she went to the musket range, and she was posting pictures, and she absolutely loved it. So I was getting a kick out of her
She was proudly holding up her her little Target thing.
So I was enjoying her pictures.
So along similar lines, you mentioned the militia, and we had seen both in your social media, but also Colonial Williamsburg as well, that you recently had gone through some militia training. Can you talk about who at the foundation has the opportunity to do that and what that looks like and how long that might take?
Yeah, what happened with that was a good friend of mine mentioned that some of our interpreters were going to be undergoing militia training. And we had the idea of, it's Women's History Month, why don't we do it? So I asked our military program, and they told me I was welcome to come join up and do go through the training with them and write a blog about it, have pictures taken and do all that. So I went out, and you start with drills. You're learning how it's basically kind of Army drills. Big shout-out to Seth Herbert, who was an amazing, amazing instructor. He was wonderful. So we went through drills. We learned how to hold the musket. We learned about pieces of the musket. We went through militia training and things they would have done. We marched. We did all sorts of things. And then we got to the really fun part, which was firing the black powder, which is like you're shooting the musket, but you're not firing any live rounds. It's just a cartridge. So we had to do that. And your goal was to be able to fire that three times, go through all of the motions three times, and then you cleared training and you were a member of the militia. So I went through the training, I did everything, and I can say that I did clear the militia, so I am now in. So maybe one day if you guys come to Colonial Williamsburg and you may see me out in the military program, you never know, firing some of the muskets out near the courthouse. But the militia training is open to anyone, any employee of Colonial Williamsburg who maybe wants to help participate in that. And for me, it was really special because I tell this story a lot, but my family is from the Tidewater area. We can go back at least the mid-1600s. And my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, Frederick Fell, was a member of the Virginia Militia. So for me, it was really cool to be able to join the militia, kind of like he did, and to be able to connect with him in that way. That was really interesting for me. So to go through that process was so much fun. And there's another blog on that too. So another plug for makinghistorynow.com. But I wrote about my experience in there, and it was really cool.
And that's also, you said, at makinghistorynow.com.
That's it.
Okay.
That's, I mean, really incredible when you think about how you went through militia training and how someone may know how to fire a fowler because they're going to hunt something, like you said, on their property. But expecting that same person to go to war after that kind of limited training and make a country out of it is really incredible. I'm sure you have a new respect for all the people that fought.
Oh, definitely. You learn going through militia training just how difficult it was. And the guys, we weren't doing nearly anything the Continental Army soldiers would have been going through as far as drills and training and all of that. They were spending days upon days learning all of that stuff. And their protocol you have to do is amazing. So it's really good to have Seth, because Seth spent time in the Marines. So it's really good to have somebody who kind of has that knowledge of now and then, to be able to kind of break it down for us and say, this is really similar to how it was then as well. So it definitely did.
Was this over the course of one day or several days?
This was several days. This was three times a week for several weeks. I was told it could be anywhere between 6 to 12 sessions.
Okay.
So for us, it was about 6 to 12 hours.
Okay, depending on how well you can sort of tick off all of the accomplishment boxes as you go.
Right.
And I think it's interesting, too, that to pass, you said you had to be able to fire the weapon three times. And just thinking of that, it doesn't seem like that's a lot. But and this is, too, one of the reasons why I think having the musket range is so great. A lot goes into firing those weapons, and they're heavy and cumbersome. And that's a really neat thing that you guys are providing for the visitors.
Yeah, I highly recommend checking out the musket range because it's an experience that you're not going to get anywhere else. And I'm not saying that just because I work at Colonial Williamsburg. It's true. I had a lot of fun out there, and I definitely will want to do it again and again and again. It was a lot of fun.
And we know that now if you know what you're doing, those weapons are accurate.
Right.
I just had one more question about the musket range. As someone who is firing the weapon, like as a guest, are you loading the weapon as well?
No. The weapon is loaded by the safety officer that is on site. He is letting you If you want to fill the powder, to paint the pan with powder, you can do that yourself.
Okay.
I wanted to because I was in the middle of going through militia training while I was there. Some of my coworkers did not want to do that part because it can get messy.
Sure.
So they didn't want to do that part. They just wanted basically everything to be done for them, and they just wanted to fire it. And it's up to you. You can talk to the training officers out there, the safety officers, and see what they'll let you do. But, yeah, it depends on your what you want to do. But as far as the loading of the musket ball, the officers do that part.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah, because that's a whole process in itself.
It is.
So where do you acquire live round musket balls?
We don't make them, no. We get them off-site. I'm not exactly sure where.
But so there is a company somewhere that has the 18th century enthusiast in mind and produces live rounds. Can you, other than the obvious sort of ticks that you would feel with a live weapon, since you sort of did both within a similar time range, can you talk about maybe some of the differences between just the demonstrative militia weapon firing and the actual live round, and maybe anything you might have noticed or observed in the course of comparing the two maybe?
Yeah, so when we went to fire the black powder for the first time, I was expecting a huge kickback. And when you put the musket up to your shoulder, and which, by the way, I'm left-handed, and you have to learn how to do all this right-handed. So for me, it was kind of awkward. So when you get the gun up there, and I was really nervous about that because I'm left-handed, so to have to do this with my right hand, I was worried about the kickback. You pull the trigger, and there was nothing. There was no kickback. I felt nothing. Going out to the musket range, I was sure there was going to be a lot more because you're actually firing a projectile. And so we get there, and I pulled the trigger. There was kickback, but not nearly as much as I was expecting, and that's because the weapon's so heavy. That has to do with the amount of kickback. I learned that from the safety officers out at the musket range and also from Seth, that the weight of the weapon has a lot to do with that kickback that you're going to feel. So the difference between the two is there is some, but I didn't feel a lot.
Well, and it's also, from my understanding, how you hold the weapon, because I have fired a Fowler before. I am a reenactor. And it's incredible how you have to keep your back straight and put it correctly in your shoulder, and it's not as easy as you look, but it's certainly something that if you put it in the wrong place, I'm sure there would be more kickback or something. So that's how you know you're doing it right.
Oh, yeah. And if you were to accidentally double load, which I did when I was in militia training, if you load more than one cartridge, anything more than three is going to be really dangerous. We did see that once. Seth described two as a cannon blast, and I had two once by accident, and
what?
He said, get ready. So it was cool.
So I know. So Krista is our resident seamstress and costumer who who is always on some sort of adventure with a new project. By the way, I'm just going to pause for a moment. Not only did Rachel hit the target, every time she shot for it, she did it left-handed. So I just wanted to take a moment in appreciation about that, and now we can move on.
Bravo. I did right-handed, but I was left-handed, and I think my militia training had a lot to do with helping me hit the target every time, because I don't think if I'd gone in that blind, I probably wouldn't have hit it at all. But I was really impressed. The guys were impressed. Everyone at militia training was impressed the next day when I told them, so that was fun.
So, Krista, and if you're interested, you can find, like I said, you can go to our website and find our individual blogs and our individual accounts, and Krista is always documenting her projects and the 18th century clothing that she's making, but I know that she's probably dying to ask some questions about how the lovely interpreters at Colonial Williamsburg are outfitted, so I'm going to turn it over to her.
I am. Well, since we're on the subject of interpreters, I mean, because when you every time I visit and everyone who works there is dressed so wonderfully and period correct. I mean, it's the attention to detail is just awesome. So I was wondering, how is it, depending on who you're portraying, how exactly do you go about getting fitted for your garments and, you know, just stuff like that. Like, is someone sewing it for you, you know, because I have seen the Margaret Hunter blogs where they're like, oh, so-and-so, she's having a new gown made and we're, you know, they're doing the draping and all this awesome stuff. So if you could just tell me a little bit how you're given your historical clothing.
Yeah, so there are two ways that you can get your clothing. And as someone who has, I have two outfits myself from our awesome Costume Design Center, there's a lot of work that goes into those. We have a whole team of historians. Everyone is making sure that everything is period appropriate. Everything is exactly how it should be based on the 18th century. We have our milliners who are amazing. And they make some stunning pieces, and they also have incredible knowledge of everything about 18th century fashion. So definitely check them out whenever you come visit Colonial Williamsburg, because they are amazing. But the process for me is once you have your new position or whatever, if you're going to have a costume, so for instance, I work out at Great Hope Plantation, which is our 18th century farm, on the weekend. So I went in, made an appointment, went in and met with someone at the Costume Design Center, and we did our fitting. They took my measurements, and then we started pulling out pieces. So I did the stays, I did jackets, fitted jacket, a bed jacket, petticoats, under petticoats, shifts, everything that you're going to have. They take your measurements, and then they bring out the pieces, and you try them on. And you keep trying everything on until you find pieces that fit you correctly and lay on you correctly and look right, and they give you the okay, this is it. And then the pieces are then taken and barcodes are sewn into all of them. So that way each one is assigned to a certain person. And that way if someone were to walk off with something that doesn't belong to them, it will be very easy for us to track it down. So it has names and everything in them. And that also is a good way for us, the Costume Design Center, because they also do laundry there as well. So for them to be able to scan the pieces in and scan them back out, it's just a good system for us to have. So.
Mm-hmm. And how much input do you get as far as, I know you have to stay with, you know, within the character that you're playing, but do you get a lot of input as to, like, what you want to wear versus what, you know, who really gets to choose, or is it sort of collaborative?
It's collaborative, I would say. Like, for instance, I don't have a gown. That wasn't part of my allotment, but if I were to want a gown, I can go talk to them and say, hey, I think that I should have a gown. When I first started at the farm, I didn't have stays, and there are some others that don't have stays. They put in a request for me to get them so I could have the back support at the farm, so I went back in and was able to do that. So it just kind of depends. You also work for a little bit, and you find, hey, this work, it won't stay up, it won't stay tied, I'm having problems with it. You take it back in, and they work their magic, or you swap it out for something else. When I got my stays, I had to get a whole new bed jacket, so I had to swap it out and get a new one. We had to keep trying stuff on until we got one that fit me, so that's what happened.
Cool.
And then there are special pieces that are made. The milliners do their wedding gown in a day. They'll do a gown in a day or wedding gown in 3 days, I think is what they do, and a gown in a day, and all sorts of other projects. They make pieces all the time. That's one really cool thing about the trades is that everyone works together. Everyone makes things for everyone. Our candle making trade is back. It was gone for more than two decades, and now it's back, more than three decades, I think, and it's back now, and they're making candles for the other trades who are making pieces for them. Like, the joiners made their cool tree that they use to hang the candles on after they dip them. So they make candles for everyone. So everyone kind of trades goods within the foundation. So it's really neat. It's like they would have done in the 18th century.
So there is apparently some magical closet at Colonial Williamsburg, or magical storage area, where everything is ready-made, and there's probably something that would fit pretty much anyone who walks in. I'm just fantasizing about all of the fantastic things that must be hidden away there. That to think that, you know, somebody can come in and to know that you're going to be custom fit and it's going to not only be put on you and fit, but to know that it's going to be flattering, and but not only flattering, but appropriate and suitable to the actual accomplishment of what you need to do during the day. And of course, you know, if you have type of work that you're doing, you know, it's going to be functional as well as, you know, form and function, I suppose, all together rolled in one.
Definitely.
How many outfits would you get?
It depends on your position. It depends on the type of work you're going to be doing. Someone who's a full-time interpreter is going to have lots of different things to wear. I'm only at the farm one day a week, so I have two that I can swap between. So that gives me an opportunity of if I need something washed and laundered, I can take it to them and still have another one to wear as well. So I have two. It just depends on your position. There are some that have a lot more than I could ever dream of having, all these beautiful gowns.
I still can't get over the barcode. I mean, you just think of 18th century beautiful hand-stitching work, and then you put in 21st century barcode with it. Like, it's just kind of, I find that just really funny. How awesome.
Speaking of Colonial Williamsburg being dressed up, those of us who are fans of Tern and Colonial Williamsburg were really excited in season two to be able to see the scenery there. And not only that, but to see the Colonial Williamsburg that we know transformed and filmed in such a way as to not necessarily be recognizable. There are a lot of aspects of Colonial Williamsburg where you're like, I know this building, but oh my gosh, look what they did with the camera angles, or look what they did with green screen. Or it was amazing to see the way that they utilized the space. And we're very curious about filming. We know that obviously with season three coming up, there are things that you can't talk about. But I think what we're mostly fascinated by is how does a film set essentially take over a public museum where people are always hanging around and, you know, either just hanging out to watch what's going on, or they're in the course of touring and they're thinking what's going on here. How did that sort of change the fabric of the everyday workings of Colonial Williamsburg, and what kind of things did you notice that were interesting or of note while that was going on?
As someone who went to film school, for me it was really awesome to be back on the set and be able to see that life again. And to being a Tern fan myself, it was even more awesome to get to see the behind the scenes of a show that I enjoyed the first season of. For the second season, when they first came to film, a lot of planning behind the scenes goes into it before they even come. We find ways to keep buildings open and accessible to guests, going through back ways, back alleys. If we need to use Duke of Gloucester Street for a scene in Tern, we find ways to get people inside the buildings through side doors or through back. Everything is worked out way in advance. It's a lot of back and forth going on. I'm not privy to a lot of it. My job with the social media department is to be up there and to help however we can and to get to watch and interact with people and the actors and the director and location scouts and all of the people. So it was really a neat experience to be able to watch all of that and how they transformed our buildings into other things. For instance, when they were filming at the Palace and at Palace Green, it's a really fun scene. Right as the ship-ins are riding in the carriage around up to the home, and Benedict Arnold swoops in and he pulls the guy off the carriage when the protesters are coming up and they're basically riding on the carriage. I watched that film several times in front of the Palace, and to see that transform from the cameras and everything there and all the props and watching them with the horse, because they had the horse trained to be able to jump up like it did, and to see everyone involved in the carriage on the truck. It was really neat to see that then played back on TV without seeing anything that I had seen in the back. And then it was just exciting, too, to see the Palace and to see Palace Green. They spread mulch on the – our streets are paved, and they spread mulch on the streets so that it looked 18th century in the show. They put the big green screen up at the magazine and that courthouse when you see the Philadelphia skyline created in the background, all the soldiers that they put in there, watching Simcoe kick open the door of the magazine 45 times was really cool in and of itself. So once I knew he was going up the stairs, and as soon as he started to go, I said, I know what's going to happen next. And he kicked open the doors of the palace of the magazine, and I was so excited because I was like, I was there. I saw that. That's our magazine. It's a really cool thing. So as far as guests go, guests, everyone's welcome to watch. Everyone stands off to the side. Everyone kind of knows how to do it. There are PAs there and other people from TURN to kind of help answer questions. And we're there to help answer any questions people may have. And when we were filming for season 3, there was a fan that was in the crowd that spoke to the director, and the director invited her to come up with him, and she was able to yell action and cut. And I know that was a really special moment for her. We posted it on our social media channels that day we filmed. So I know that was a really special moment for her. So a lot of planning goes into everything. When we're executing it, it's still a lot happening behind the scenes, and we are really happy to be able to have TURN come and use Williamsburg. Not as Williamsburg, but as Philadelphia. So we're really looking forward to watching season 3 and being able to spot Colonial Williamsburg again.
And that's wonderful. You mentioned, going to mention the fact that if you haven't seen the new trailer, it's all Colonial Williamsburg. That's the 3-minute trailer. Is you need to watch it and slow it down and watch it again, because you can see all kinds of great Colonial Williamsburg shots, and you may have to take a second to be able to place it, because they do such a great job kind of manipulating the camera angles to make things look new and exciting. I'm sorry, go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, no, that's great. I wanted to ask, you kind of went through the list. I had 2 questions. If you could, like, run down again what buildings we kind of see through the seasons, so people can, you know, look for them when they're there. And then also, were anyone from Colonial Williamsburg staff extras or have any sort of involvement with the filming, or is that kind of a separate entity?
As far as the extras go, it's separate in that anyone who wanted to be an extra can be an extra. It wasn't really reaching out and working directly that way with, yes, we want to use these people here and do this. Some very good friends of mine are going to be extras in season 3, so I'm really excited to look and see them and be able to spot them. And that they had long days. Some traveled to Petersburg, some stayed in Williamsburg. It just depended on what episode they were going or what they were going to be doing. The buildings that were shown, we had the courthouse, the magazine, and the palace were really featured heavily in season 2, and the Capitol is going to be in season 3 as well.
Recognize that in the clips, yeah, the Capitol. Mm-hmm. How, when they come to film, is it like a massive group of people that come and transform everything? I mean, or is it really just sort of like a small crew that comes in and sets up and films?
It depends on the scenes they're going to be doing. A lot of work goes into getting everything set up. We have our own full-time production staff at Colonial Williamsburg, and we do a lot of videos. If you check out our YouTube channel, the majority of the things on there were done by our production staff. They're super talented and wonderful. And I know how much work goes into our small productions we do with them and our small crew. And a show at like TURN is going to have a bigger crew and is going to have a lot more aspects to it that need to be done. So I don't want to say like a huge crowd of people come in to transform it, but it's a pretty sizable amount are working on that.
How long did it take them? Was it just like a few days, or were they in town for weeks?
It was just a few days.
We have on Facebook, so Karen is our Facebook guru, and she shares all of these fabulous posts. She finds all of these great posts from all over that are TURN-related and also 18th century-related, and so definitely like us on Facebook because she's bringing us all kinds of awesome content all the time. And there was a woman who had been visiting Williamsburg and happened to have what appears to be a fantastic camera and quite an eye, and so she had taken a lot of photos that, you know, from an appropriate distance that, nothing, you know, no spoilers, but she had taken photos, and it looked as if, did they actually put up a green screen on Duke of Gloucester Street?
Yeah, and in that extended, that first look trailer, you can see what they did with that, so check it out. That's really cool. That's probably my favorite part of the entire trailer, because I saw the huge screens on the street, and I was so excited to see what they did with it. I can't wait to see it on a big screen on my TV when it airs.
Some of the friends that Rachel has mentioned were individuals that she has introduced us to in the course of our travels at Colonial Williamsburg. Since meeting Rachel, we've been back and had a chance to reconnect with them. That's one of the things that I wanted to mention just in the course of our discussion. The people who work at Colonial Williamsburg are so genuinely awesome. that it's kind of difficult to quantify. And it was really cool because there were a few other, you know, friends of Rachel's that we had met who were such big fans of Turn, and for them to have had the chance to become extras and then sort of return to the place where they work and then be dressed in their Turn clothing as opposed to their work clothing. It was really interesting to see pictures of them and how different they looked, but then obviously how accurate. So it was really cool to kind of see that, and especially to know that that they are not only 18th century enthusiasts, but fans of the show, that they were, you know, putting all of this effort into making sure that, that their role was going to really complement the setting and the scene. It was really neat to see that. And really exciting, I think, for them.
Oh, yeah, and I echo that. I work with a lot of really amazing people who are extremely talented and very good at what they do, and I'm so proud to be able to call them friends and colleagues, and I'm so proud to be able to work at Colonial Williamsburg because it's a dream come true for me. I've wanted to work there since I was a little kid, and it's a magical place, and I want to shout it from the rooftops that everyone should come and check us out because we have a lot of fun, and we have a lot of really awesome people there.
And I can tell you that just as a visitor, it's amazing to go. We have had, because our little group here have gone several times now, and one of the things that really struck me is I've been many times, and, you know, coming before the Black Petticoat Society, you do. You get a lot of information. You learn a lot about the period. But with these ladies, once the interpreters know that you're really, really interested and you want to talk about it, they're so willing to go in depth and talk to you, you know, even more detailed about the history, their trade, you know, whatever it is that you're interested in. They're so nice and they're so engaging, and we've had such a wonderful time all of the times that we've gone quite often recently. So it's just fantastic, and it's so much fun.
Can I just say, as far as the experience, this is the first time I did that, and it was with the wonderful Black Petticoat Girls. If you want an experience, we stayed at one of the colonial houses, the Colonial Lodging, and can I just tell you, it was phenomenal. All, you know, and I didn't know, it was just, I just found out about it, like, you know, within like the past few years. And then when I realized that you were able to do, when you were able to actually stay in the historic district, in the historic lodging, I said, oh, look, this is something I have to do. And I was lucky enough to have my first experience. We stayed at the Isham Gadin shop, and I was with the girls, and it was just so much fun. I mean, the thing is now I have to go back because I have to go back when it's cold so that we can have the fireplace lit.
Yeah, talk about an immersive experience. You really feel, when you stay in these colonial homes there, you feel like you were in the 18th century. It was fantastic.
And for those of you who are wondering, like, where that might be on Google Gloucester Street, it's at the very far end. It's right next to Christina Campbell's Tavern. So it's the little charming brick red house. And our house, we had a bedroom, and we had a kind of a, just a front room, like a common room with the fireplace that Krista mentioned, and some chairs, and we had a bedroom upstairs, and it was really, it was awesome because it was the first time that the five of us girls had ever met each other and had ever gotten together. And I know that Robin had also been dying to stay in a colonial house. She had mentioned that many times, and she was the one who kind of took the lead and took the reins and said, you know what, we're going. And she called and she got us the house, and we got we had a PDF of the house. We were all so excited, and that was the first time actually that Taryn and Amanda and I had ever actually worn 18th century clothes. Robin is an avid reenactor in both the 19th and 18th centuries, and also starting to into the 20th century too. And Krista has been doing her costuming in the 18th century, and also in the 19th century, late 19th century in the Victorian period. So they brought their clothing with them, and they dressed those of us without clothing. Well, we had clothing, but they dressed those of us without 18th century clothing. In 18th century clothing, and really they gave us the bug, because when we returned in October, By that point, Karen and I had assembled complete 18th century outfits. We were totally ready to go from, you know, from first layer to last. And that was actually when we met Rachel. And I just wanted to echo what Karen said about when the interpreters know that you are really into the experience, the entire experience, they will really take the time to really ask you about what you're interested in and make sure that you hear all about that. And I wanted to thank Rachel again, because it was so great for her to reach out and for her to introduce us to so many fantastic interpreters. And we've become such wonderful friends. So it was such a great thing. And one of the things that we had asked Rachel before we arrived was, we want to dress out. Is that okay? And she said, yes, of course. We love that. And that's a really great thing, is that however, with Colonial Williamsburg, you can make as much of the experience as you choose. As much as you choose to immerse yourself, you can get out of this as much as you can possibly imagine. It's just, you know, this is cliche, but Colonial Williamsburg is the gift that keeps on giving.
And to echo Alyssa's sentiments, it's totally true. I mean, everyone is wonderful, and it just kind of, you know, takes you in, and it's just great. And if you do choose to dress up, it doesn't matter if you're 10 or if you're 30 or if you're 100, and the interpreters, they will play along with you and treat you as, you know, an 18th century woman or man, and that's just a really, really fun experience to do. So I'd encourage anyone who's thinking about it to just take that leap of faith and do it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, please don't be shy. Come see us and come wear your costume and show off your beautiful pieces, because I take a walk every single day. I try to go for a walk in the historic area and just walk around and meet people and say hi to anyone I see and have a good time. And I love to see especially little kids in their costumes. They're the cutest little things. They really get into it. And one of my favorite things I love to do is to practice my courtesies with little girls who come up to me in costume, and they're just so beautiful. So please, dress the whole family up. I love to see mom, dad, and the kids and everyone. We love it. So come dress to the nines. If you need some help, we have costume rentals for kids, and we're going to start doing costume rentals for adults as well. So go to the visitor center. They can give you all the information you need for that. And we encourage it. Please do.
And I had no idea that you were going to start that for adults, which is awesome. I was going to mention that if you're looking for somewhere to start and you want to start building your own 18th century wardrobe, there's lots of ways to do that, from learning to sew to spending hours and hours and hours upon hours on Etsy. But what you can do, which is probably a more exciting experience, is to go into the shops at Colonial Williamsburg, and they have all kinds of fantastic garments. You can buy fabric there. I know Krista has bought lots of fabric there, but they also they have everything from gowns to, you know, the actual pieces themselves, the jackets, the petticoats. They're also starting to carry the shoe line by American Duchess. There's a specific shoe called the Dunmore that she developed in conjunction with Colonial Williamsburg, and it's sort of like their official collaborative shoe. So you can get everything there, from your shoes to your buckles to buttons, fabric. You can get cloaks and mittens and everything that you would need to get in order to outfit yourself to become an 18th century person. So you can walk in jeans and a t-shirt and walk out looking like you belong on Duke of Gloucester Street. So along those lines, we're actually wanted to mention, we're really excited because this season we're going to be doing a series of giveaways of 18th century jewelry as the season of turn progresses. During our podcast, we're going to be announcing the giveaways, and we're going to be sharing the different pieces that are going to be up for grabs and you can win. So the creator of this jewelry is Kimberly Walters. She has a shop called Sign of the Gray Horse, and she has created jewelry that is 18th century accurate. And she also has created some jewelry that is Regency appropriate too, if you're into the Regency period as well. A lot of her pieces are sold at Colonial Williamsburg, and also many were purchased by Turn for use in filming. And so we're really excited because there are a lot of really amazing pieces that you can find in the shops at Colonial Williamsburg, and we kind of want to bring that flavor to the fans. It's one thing to admire gowns on screen and to admire waistcoats and shoes and buckles, but it's another thing to put yourself in those garments. I remember I was standing with Robin, who, if you ever need to be put into stays, is the woman that you go to, because she laced me in like nobody's business. I remember standing with her in our hotel room, looking in the mirror and saying, "Oh my God, Robin," because I felt so different. Obviously, my hips were, you know, maybe 3.5 feet wider, and that'll change the way you see yourself sometimes. But just to feel what it's like to be wearing the garments, how your body feels, how you have to adjust your movements, all of that, to get really into the world of the 18th century, we encourage you to try that because it's just so much fun. So we're hoping to bring a lot of that to everyone. And Rachel, could you talk a little bit about Kimberly's rescue of some of the horses and how that
benefits? Yeah, we love Kimberly. Yeah, she's great. We love her. She's taken some of our retired horses, and she cares for them and loves on them when they can't drive ride pool carriages anymore. She's amazing. We love to work with her, and her jewelry is beautiful. So please support her because we love her. She's amazing. And all the money that she makes off of some of the jewelry goes to help take care of the horses. So we appreciate her.
We're very excited. And we will also, for those of you who are not able to win, you can always go to her Etsy site and check out all of the beautiful pieces that she has. And you can just find some and have them sent to you. They are they're lovely, and they are also extremely affordable. She has pieces for men as well, including, you know, cufflinks and buttons and such. So definitely check out her website. We wanted to talk about something very special that Rachel is going to be involved in. That is, it's such an important thing because of the upcoming election, and Colonial Williamsburg is involved in this conversation and wants to encourage everyone to exercise their rights and be informed citizens and empower themselves to make choices based on what they think is going to be best. So, Rachel, can you talk about General Washington and his campaign and what his mission is and some of the things you've done with him in traveling throughout the country and encouraging people to exercise their right to vote?
Yeah, so it's our It Starts Here campaign, and it is a non-presidential campaign in that George Washington, General Washington, is headed out. He went out last year. We're going to go back out again this year on the campaign trail where the candidates are going, the real candidates. And it's an effort to promote civic responsibility and to say all of these arguments that we're having now, that these candidates now are debating, we were debating that in the 18th century in Williamsburg. It started in Williamsburg. And so we want people to stay informed. We want people to stay engaged. Part of his tagline is participate, debate, vote. It's so important to stay informed, and it's so important to be part of the conversation because we the people are the ones that are choosing our leaders. And it's important for us to make sure that we do it. And this was what our founders fought for, and this is what they created. So General Washington he traveled to Iowa. We went. I'm his national field director, so part of my job is making sure that he is out on the campaign trail. He's meeting with people. He's pushing his message. He's getting it out there to the masses. We were featured on CNN. We were featured on Fox News, ABC News. We went to Des Moines, Iowa, to the state fair, where he was the first non-politically affiliated person to speak on the Des Moines Register soapbox at the state fair, which was a huge deal because all the candidates speak on that soapbox. A lot of political figures speak on that soapbox. And for him to be the very first one that wasn't politically affiliated by party or had a specific thing was a huge deal for us. So he opened it up. He kicked the whole thing off. While we were there, we met Mike Huckabee, Martin O'Malley, Jim Webb, Steve King from Iowa, his representative from Iowa. And they were all getting ready to speak at the state fair as well. So we met a good chunk of presidential candidates while we were in Iowa. And the next week, we went to New Hampshire. We went to Manchester, New Hampshire, and went around and met. We met Chris Christie, and we literally ran into Jeb Bush at the Puritan Backroom Restaurant.
in New Hampshire, which was awesome. So all in all, we met with 5 candidates. Unfortunately, none of them are still in the race now, but at the time, they all were still in it. So this was in August of last year, 2015. So we got shining endorsements from all of them, from both sides of the aisle. We are not picking a side. We are not going to pick a side. That's not what Colonial Williamsburg does. That's not what we will do. We are very objective in this. This is about you as a person making a decision and making sure that you're informed. We don't endorse any particular candidate. So we will be going back out. Stay tuned to his social channels for that. He can be found on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at 01POTUS, which is the first president of the United States. For people who don't know what POTUS stands for, it's president of the United States. So follow him on his social channels, and I will be traveling back out with him soon. So stay tuned to that for more information, because it's coming.
That's one thing that I want to say, too, is that Colonial Williamsburg is great because not only do they make the past come alive, but they make it relevant. And so the nice thing is that when you are in the revolutionary city, you very much feel like you're in the past. But when you are interacting with Colonial Williamsburg on social media, or you're just checking out the website, everything that they do is somehow connected back to how things impact us as individuals today. And so it's not just a museum. It's not passive. It's actively engaged in how can we enrich people's lives in an educational way and help them to connect with their past, but also with their future. And I think that this is a perfect example of that, is that these are values that, there are a lot of people who sometimes say, oh, well, we look to the past and, maybe that's one of the things, but no, we need to learn from the past, but do it in a mindful way. And I think Colonial Williamsburg is an excellent example of that, and particularly with regard to this campaign, because thinking for oneself and exercising autonomy and participating in government, these are all things that we are privileged to have the right to do if you live here in the United States. And so I want to commend Rachel and the First POTUS on their efforts. And I hope that if you see them, or if you know that they're coming, if you can't get to Colonial Williamsburg and they're going to be near you, definitely go and visit and see what they're up to, because they're the definition. Colonial Williamsburg is the definition of living history.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. We work really hard to do that, and that it's nice to hear that that's resonating, because that's exactly what we strive to do every day.
I was just going to say, they do. They do an excellent job of reminding you it's a privilege what we have, choosing our leaders and keeping everything relevant with our daily lives today. So same thing you were going to say.
The problem with being a member of the Black Petticoat Society is you get to know your friends so well that sometimes you take the words right out of their mouth.
Happens a lot.
And you also, can you mention, for those people who are not familiar with Colonial Williamsburg, could you also mention some of the other famous faces that they might see on Duke of Gloucester Street?
Oh, yes, there are so many. We have Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, Martha Washington, Gowan Pamphlet, Edith Cumbo, Patrick Henry, Alexander Purdy. We have the whole kit and caboodle. We have so many people you're going to find, and everyone you encounter is a real person who really lived in Williamsburg. Hannah Powell, Benjamin Powell, Peyton Randolph, everyone that you're going to encounter were real people who lived in Williamsburg in the 18th century. And the people that portray these characters have done extensive research on the people they're playing, so they know what they're doing, and they have worked really hard in making sure that they have all the facts about who they are, and they know how to portray them, and they're wonderful. And so, yes, you're going to see lots of really cool people there, and they're wonderful.
You definitely can't trip them up. They know what they're doing.
No. I was just going to say that for those people who may think that, okay, it's a town, I can ask people questions, they're in character, yes, it is that, and yes, that is wonderful. But it also gives you the opportunity to interact with a historical figure that you may know very little or a whole lot about. But Rachel's absolutely correct. These individuals are so dedicated to what they are doing. They fully immerse themselves in the identity of these individuals. So that when they answer a question, they answer it from a place of thoughtfulness and experience and genuine understanding, so that you know that if you have a question for James Madison and it's a really important question and you really are intent on having this answer, you will get an authentic answer. And it's really cool because it gives you access to somebody that you may have only seen portrayed on a screen or read about on the page. So it's not just that you're walking down a street and seeing 18th century people. You're seeing representations of individuals who were amazing instruments in pushing forward the history that we know to be the story of our nation today.
Go ahead, Gary.
Everybody is a real person. It's true. You don't just see James Madison and Thomas Jefferson. You see the Channings, you know. And just every town person you run across, they were real people, and they all have a story, and you can learn something from every single one. It's fun.
And Williamsburg, I think, is just so good at doing that, and the interpreters are just so into their craft that I don't know if any of you saw their April Fool's prank, but they wrote a blog post about, correct me if I'm wrong, Rachel, in any of this, about having a young Abraham Lincoln because they're going to bring some Civil War portrayal. And my understanding, a lot of people actually believed it because it was just so in line with what they were going to do, and to have another well-researched interpreter there. And I was personally shocked when I saw that, and then I remembered it was April Fool's and figured it out. But, they even have April Fool's jokes about it.
Oh, yeah. We try to have fun. We try to make it fun, engaging, interesting. Don't be afraid to ever ask questions. Don't be afraid to approach people in the street and engage with them and talk, because you never know what you're going to learn while you're out there.
Well, speaking of fun, can I just mention Challenges for a second?
Yeah.
Okay. If someone was going to bring that up.
If you want an experience, you need to go to Channing's, because the games there, the people there are just so much fun. It's a really good time. They have musicians there. It is a lot of fun. I can go there every single evening if I had to, and I would never get tired of it. It's that fun.
And we sort of do.
Oh yes, and they have they'll read your fortune there too.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
We actually, and I can tell you, the results are accurate, because I was told something and it actually turned out to be true. You know, I could be confirmation bias, or Colonial Williamsburg could just be comprehensively awesome, and I think that it's probably the latter. it's a great time. So you can not only sample 18th century style foods, you can do that at many of the taverns that are on Duke Gloucester Street, but in addition, they also have different ales if you're into libations, and you can they have gambles, so you can learn how to play Shut the Box. And in addition, it's wonderful because in the evenings there are often musicians that will come around and join you in each room and play different songs and encourage you to sing along. And if you like peanuts, there's peanuts too. and of course,
some of the beers are actually. Yeah, some of the beers that we have on tap at Channings were actually created specifically for us in conjunction with Aleworks Brewery here in town in Williamsburg. So there's Old Stitch and Dear Old Mom, which is my personal favorite. Enjoy those, because they are specially made for us. They are authentic 18th century recipes, and they are amazing. So check them out.
Krista, were you recommending a particular ale?
I second Dear Old Mom. I third Dear Old Mom. I picked Dear Old Mom.
I personally recommend the Stone Fence. That's just my two cents. I'm a big fan. And so when you walk down the street, you'll encounter different individuals. But every time you enter a shop, or whether it's a workshop or a store, you'll also encounter different individuals. And there are interpreters also giving tours, naturally. But when you go to Channings, the Channings themselves are there. So it's nice, because if you're seated and you're just chatting with your family, they'll come by and they'll talk to you and you can ask them questions. And so it's not just that everyone kind of has a post where they stay. People are migrating up and down the street. People are coming around to different, when they're in a restaurant, they're coming around to different tables. And so it's very it's very fluid. There's always different things going on. And sometimes you'll see someone walking down the street at 10 a.m. and you'll see them at 2 p.m. and it's like, oh, you know that they've been sort of about their day and doing all kinds of interesting things. So it's really an awesome experience. And of course, we encourage anybody who hasn't ever been definitely to go because it's not just a Living History Museum. The other thing, too, that we should mention is that the Kimball Theater is in town. It's not very far away. And so Colonial Williamsburg hosts many events there. So the interpreters will, sometimes there'll be a meeting of minds, and you'll see two very well-known individuals having a discussion, or there will be live music, or there are also different productions. I believe A Harlequin Holiday was recently performed around Christmas time, and A Maid.
Miss and Her Teens?
What was the title of that play? Yes, A Miss and Her Teens, not A Maid.
Yes.
A Miss. Yes. So there are fantastic programs going on there, and you'll see many of your many of the interpreters that you recognize on the street. You will see them in these performances as well. So some incredible actors at Colonial Williamsburg, because at least in my opinion, not to discredit those who have lines, but anyone who has to think on the spot and also keep their character is a talented person. If they can pull that off, they are a good actor. So, yeah, come. Well, I don't say come. I say go. Because Colonial Williamsburg, found, of course, in Williamsburg, Virginia, but definitely visit.
Yeah, and Rachel, how would anyone who wants to try to figure out their vacation or get in contact with Williamsburg about any questions about their trips, who would they contact to get their trip together?
Yeah, a great place to start would be our website, colonialwilliamsburg.com. That has an events calendar. It has all of the fun stuff we're doing. That's how you can reserve tickets for the Musket Range, for anything you want to do. You can buy tickets online. Things like that. The Visitor Center, once you're on site, is also a great place to start. That will help you plan your itinerary and things you need. And then if you have questions that you want us to answer on social media, we are always around to do that. So we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on Snapchat now, so make sure you follow us on Snapchat because our snaps are a lot of fun. We have a really good time with those, so check us out on there. So if you have any questions at all, send us a message, tweet us, whatever you need, send us lots of pictures because we like seeing those on Instagram. Make sure you hashtag them with Colonial Williamsburg. We like to see them. So if you ever have any questions, reach out to us on social. That's what we're here for.
And not only do you have the official Colonial Williamsburg Facebook page, but there's also an additional Facebook page called Historic Trades and Skills of Colonial Williamsburg. And so if you're somebody who is unable to take a vacation, you know, to Colonial Williamsburg in the near future, one of the really cool things that I've noticed in the course of just scrolling through feeds is sometimes they will go live. And so you can watch a live Facebook feed and you can watch the craftsmen at work, and Facebook users can chime in as the work is going on. So whoever's there representing social media is watching the feed and will ask live questions of the individual as they're doing their work. And so they can answer you in real time. So, you know, if you're supposed to be at work and you're in the office and you're pretending you're doing what you're supposed to, but you're actually watching them make weapons, that's okay. And you should chime in and ask them questions. Because it's really neat to not only get to watch them live streaming from wherever it might be. There's been different ones that they've done recently, but not only that, but you can ask your questions almost as if you were standing right there at Colonial Williamsburg. So that's the great thing, is that history comes alive through these different methods, and everyone can participate, and Colonial Williamsburg is so accessible when you have questions, whether it's just about planning your trip, where should I stay, where should I park, things of that nature, to I have questions about how you make this particular item and how it's fabricated and what materials you use. They are so knowledgeable and they are so willing to answer all of your questions. So definitely take advantage of the social media aspect, because it's a really neat way to kind of keep yourself in the loop if you're not able to visit. Well, in closing, we want to thank Rachel so much for joining us tonight. We're big fans of Colonial Williamsburg, but we're also big fans of Rachel. So we're so happy that
She was here to join us. I want to thank her and Colonial Williamsburg on behalf of all of us. Krista DeSillo, Karen Ross, Robin Maddy, Amanda Lee, I'm Melissa Von Kirkbride. We really want to encourage everyone to check out the campaign that Rachel has mentioned. It's going to be very exciting. Hopefully they're going to be visiting some other cities in the United States as our current election moves forward and campaigns continue until next fall's election, and also keep abreast of what's going on with Rachel's campaign for Colonial Williamsburg's own George Washington. And we hope to see you on the next one. Rachel, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's been great.
It is.
Yay! It's our pleasure. It has been an absolute joy. And we will be podcasting throughout the season, so we will see you Monday, March 25th. And also look out for additional podcasts during the season. Sometimes we'll pop up with additional supplemental podcasts as we feature different guests and different themes and topics. So we look forward to interacting with all of you throughout the season, and we hope that when you visit Colonial Williamsburg, you have as wonderful a time as we have every time that we go. Thank you guys all so much for listening. It has been an absolute pleasure. Good night. Bye.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
Bye.
For more information on this podcast, check out our website at podcast.history.org. There you can send your comments or suggestions, and we're always glad to hear from you.